Welcome to Clinical Conversations 124th podcast. It comes to you from Journal Watch, whose website is at jwatch.org. I'm Joe Elia. It's June 23rd, 2011. Dr. Danielle Schurer of Physicians First Watch and the Medical University of South Carolina is also here. This time we talk about a fundamental issue. How accurate are blood pressure recordings? Now, before you run off elsewhere, listen to this. In the latest edition of the Annals of Internal Medicine, Veterans Affairs researchers report following about 450 older hypertensive patients for a year and a half. They were the subjects in a study of the best way to control hypertension. Now, according to how the pressures were taken, in the first 30 days of the trial, the group was in systolic control 28% of the time according to routine clinic measurements, 47% of the time according to home measurements, and 68% of the time when measured according to careful research criteria. Categorization across all three methods was consistent in only one-third of the patients. What's going on here? The study's first author, Dr. Benjamin Powers, is here to talk about it. Dr. Powers is an internist at the Durham, North Carolina Veterans Affairs Medical Center in the Department of Health Services Research and Development. Welcome, Dr. Powers.
Thank you for having me.
You mentioned in your paper's introduction that routine measurements made in the clinic guide most treatment decisions in hypertension, yet these very measurements differed most widely from those done according to a research protocol. Are our routine clinical measurements in trouble?
You know, I'm not sure the answer to that, but there is clearly, both in our study and other studies have found, a consistent and quite often substantial difference between the readings we obtain in clinic and the readings that patients can obtain at home using validated and accurate home monitors. And I think the disturbing thing is we've always assumed that our clinic measurements were a good surrogate for the research measurement, where we first recognized that blood pressure was important and where our earliest data for treatment came from. But the clinic was even substantially higher than that standardized research measurement. So I do think that we're probably in a period of shift and having to decide which ones do we believe and which ones, how are we going to use this disparate information for making decisions.
And so in this study, there were basically three different measurements. So you had routine visit clinical measurements, home measurements done about three times a week, sent in electronically, and then research-grade measurements made every 6 months. And so correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the difference in control between clinic and home can be explained by this, you know, longstanding white coat hypertensive hypothesis. But the explanation for the difference in control between the research setting in the clinic, do you think this was just, you know, good or bad technique that we really are not very careful about, you know, very basic sort of, you know, JNC7 recommendations on how to take a blood pressure?
I do think that some of it is probably technique. When people have looked at, observed how blood pressure is actually routinely measured in the clinic and the blood pressures that we usually obtain, they've found that it deviates widely from the recommended standard for measurement that that we all endorse, but we just unfortunately don't practice as well. I think that those, it's not all just the carefulness of measurement, because there is an impact from being stressed about being at the doctor, that no matter how closely you follow the protocol, it does, that stress impacts a person's blood pressure, and it fluctuates. So, you know, we found about the same amount of variability in different measures, in the measurements, whether it be research or the clinic measurement. So I do think it's a combination of careful measurement, but also just the impact of stress that's difficult to overcome no matter how carefully you follow that protocol.
And you also tried to estimate these within patient variability for each kind of measurement. And so can you explain to us in very non-statistical terms what you found in terms of patient variability in the three different settings?
Sure. You know, what we usually get in clinic or wherever we're measuring is just a brief snapshot of what that person's blood pressure is at that moment. But we know that people's blood pressure fluctuates from hour to hour and day to day, and it's different at night than it is during the day, and it's maybe higher in the evening than in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we obviously can't capture that in clinic. So what we tried to represent was over the, when it's compared from day to day and that variability, even within an individual, how noisy of a measure is it? What's the signal-to-noise ratio for blood pressure?
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty consistent no matter where you measured it, whether it was in the research setting, the home setting, or in clinic. It was, the expression we use is the coefficient of variation, which is just what their standard deviation is divided by their average blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about 10%. So about their blood pressure varied by about 10%. No matter where you measured it, and that's just inherent variability that we just, I think most primary care physicians like me who are treating this in clinic don't have a great appreciation for because we just don't see all the data in front of us.
You reported that no single pressure measurement done in during a routine clinic visit that measured between roughly 120 and 160 systolic was sufficient to classify a patient as being in or out of pressure control with 80% accuracy. Talk about that a bit. You say that you need 10 clinic measurements versus only 5 home measurements to achieve that 80% accuracy. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, we tried to boil this down to the most fundamental decision that a clinician has to make. And when they see someone in clinic with hypertension, or without hypertension, and they see that blood pressure reading, they're trying to decide, is their blood pressure at goal, or are they above goal? And really, is that true underlying average for the person above or below goal? And so we, you know, it gets a little technical in terms of the statistics for how we did it, but we basically set up a statistical function for where we have their observed blood pressure, and we have their true underlying blood pressure, and essentially setting up like confidence intervals for every given individual observed blood pressure. How confident are we that their true blood pressure is above or below that threshold?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the range of blood pressures where you could really decide with an 80% certainty or outside of that 80% confidence interval that someone is in or out of control? And it turns out the more measurements you average together, the more certain you can be. The tighter the confidence interval, if you will, for how certain you are, those observed blood pressures, the average of those, it really reflects what their true underlying average is from hour to hour and day to day over the course of the week. And, you know, the closer you get to that threshold of control, the more measurements you need to be sure that person is in or out of control. And so I think a lot of primary care providers are used to seeing one or two clinic readings, and that's all they have, and they're trying to make a decision. And for most readings, you can make a decision, but you can't do it with that level of confidence that they really, truly are in or out of control until you start averaging measurements together.
And so in some ways, does this sort of justify our longstanding clinical inertia for treating hypertension?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a very good point and something that we've talked about, because I think a lot of what we have put forth in this article and have, you know, we've put together very sophisticated biostatistics to try and express really boils down to what a lot of physicians' basic clinical judgment suggests is
yeah,
that
they sort of already...
Yeah, they kind of already get this, that when I
yeah.
see a person and their blood pressure's high, you know, I'm a little reluctant to have a
mm-hmm.
knee-jerk reaction to this information and to make a important change in their medication or their treatment plan based on just this limited information. So I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think the people actually out doing this on a regular basis get this.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's not how we're evaluated in terms of the quality of care we provide. And,
right.
and you use the term clinical inertia. There's a whole literature suggesting and somewhat with a negative tone that doctors just aren't being aggressive enough,
or they're just it.
Yeah, they just see this information and they just decide to let it ride and to not bother. And I think that this hopefully swings the pendulum back a little bit the other way to recognize that it's actually quite reasonable to not
to wait.
To wait and to gather more information and to make sure that you know what you need to know to really make an informed decision for a patient.
And so this may be a tricky question, but if you could literally tomorrow, with any amount of time, money, and energy, design and implement an ideal care map for ambulatory hypertensive patients, what would it look like? Would it involve, you know, X number of home measurements, X number of clinic measurements? I mean, do you feel like you have enough information from your study to take a leap of faith about what that would look like?
You know, I think that anyone who, I would start with anyone who high blood pressure or had a history of borderline readings would first of all have a home monitor and would have the ability to check their blood pressure at home and would be encouraged to do that periodically to help their doctors make better decisions for them. And I think that there could be real flexibility depending on what works best for the clinic setting, the patient, in terms of how this information is collected and transmitted to the provider. But for some, it might be before your upcoming clinic appointment, check your blood pressure, you know, 5, preferably even 10 times over the course of the preceding week or two.
Mm-hmm.
Bring all that information to me. And if we actually had home blood pressure monitors or ways of compiling that, averaging it, showing the variation, showing their highs and lows, so that the doctor at the point of care could see what are they averaging, what's, you know, how high are they going, how low are they going, they would have far better information than they do in just that brief clinical measurement to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this also is a decision that doesn't require face-to-face care to provide good medical care. And you know, this could, I have patients of mine who transmit this information through secure messaging or email to me directly, and I'll review it, and we'll converse back and forth either over the phone or email and make a decision. But there's not, you know, it doesn't require a physical exam in the way that other parts of medical care do. So I think that there should be flexibility dependent on the technical capabilities of the patient, but hopefully some way of aggregating information from home measurements so that the doctor has that in front of them, and the decision is much easier and, more importantly, much more informed than what it is based on their limited clinic information.
By the way, what did you think, Dr. Powers, of that editorial that accompanied your paper? That was, I would have to characterize as strongly worded. They propose blood pressure measurement technique as a quality measure. Do you think that's possible?
I do think it's possible. I think a number of quality measures have been accompanied by many workarounds that may reflect the letter of the law, but somehow the spirit and the ability to follow what it's intended to follow sometimes are missed. So I do think that we definitely could do better in clinic measuring it. But I think that even if we carefully measure it and if we focus on that level of quality in the clinic setting, we still won't overcome the impact of stress from the clinical encounter that influences blood pressure. And I think that we also miss an opportunity for transitioning to home measurement as a good means of obtaining this information. So I think that the measurement technique needs to be more than just how the nurse or doctor in clinic collects that information, to more how are we educating our patients on measuring their blood pressure? Are we sure that they're using validated cuffs, that they're measuring it properly, and that we have ways of collecting, obtaining, and aggregating this information. So I definitely agree with the editorial, and I, you know, a lot of the stuff that we wrote about has been known for a while, but it's not taken real seriously and is sometimes forgotten in terms of the importance of accurate measurement and having adequate information.
That's great. Great discussion. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks, Dr. Powers. So ends Conversation 124. Earlier podcasts are all available, and they're all free, at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time for myself and Dr. Danielle Scherer. Thank you for listening.